Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, number 34. On today's episode, I finish off my conversation with my friend Paul Morrissey. Paul and I were talking about his college basketball career before we got into the discussion of his short-lived and doomed sports journalism career. He was a news guy. He did the sports on Newsday, on local news. And by local, I mean local. I mean inbred local. By the way, our team in the Comedians Basketball League lost. Sean Kemp's kid lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Rick Glassmans. We got blown out. I managed to miss all rim on a layup attempt, my only shot for the game. Very embarrassing. I'm horribly out of shape. But anyway, when we got into the discussion, we were midway through talking about his offer to play for the Washington Generals, which is the team that always plays the Harlem Globetrotters. We're in the middle of talking to that, so we pick up mid-conversation. My storyteller show is Wednesday, December 7th, 2011, at the Los Angeles, the Hollywood Improv. It's $5. It's a great show. Mark Maron is doing it. Steve Renazzisi from The League, John Reap, Kevin Christie, the guy who makes those rad posters. And we got a very special celebrity is going to be there that I can't say who because they're a celebrity, and we have to protect their draw. So, but it should be, it's great. It's a great comic. You guys will love it. So be there December 7th. And that's it, everybody. My hunt for the edibles, is Saturday, December 3rd at the Palms in Las Vegas. It's where I just have a scavenger hunt for, marijuana edibles. If you have friends that are going to the fights, please tell them. If you have cops that are going to the fights, please do not tell them. That's it. Here we go with Paul Morrissey picking up mid-conversation about his offer to play for the Washington Generals. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank number 34, The Sports Machine, kicks off now.
So then, either one of those options, I was like, I don't want to do that, but I was still interested in, like, maybe the sports stuff. And then I had a lead on, like, an internship with the Phoenix Suns.
Okay, to do what? Whatever?
Yeah, just whatever. I was like, I just want to be involved. Like, there's a guy who went to Cortland that was, like, he was, like, the GM of the Milwaukee Bucks or something. And I was, like, tried to get in with that. And then, just for some reason, it worked with the Suns.
And keep talking. I'm going to get some gummy bears because this is going to be a good story.
Okay. So I get out to Phoenix and... And so the Phoenix Suns thing doesn't seem like as 100% as it was when I left. And the guy's like,
people
like,
no problem, I'll get you a job.
And he was just like, I thought you were going to be here like next month or something. I was like, no, I'm like here now. And
well, I'm not here the next month.
And it was so weird. It turned out, and this is like when you just believe that things, everything happens for a reason. It was like a guy that was like a high school teacher of mine, his son-in-law was like, a TV news anchor in Phoenix. And he was just like, hey, I knew Paul used to like work at this station here. Does he want to do an internship at the Fox station in Phoenix? Like, just ask my dad that. And it was just so random.
Yeah.
And I was like, sure. And then like the next day I called the guy. He's like, yeah, come on down.
And then you like, got an internship just like that?
Yeah, they offered me an internship like that next day.
There's no way. Do you want some of these?
Oh, no, sorry.
You're staring at me like so interested. I didn't think you did.
It just looks like they're very old and melted, like it's been a doorstop.
Oh, no, it's just a giant bag I just bought recently. And now I'm tasked with like finishing it. It's like a 40-pound bag.
Then I end up getting an internship with Fox Sports, like the Fox station in Phoenix. So I covered the first season of the WNBA.
What do you mean covered? To an intern?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that you cover. You just bring a camera around or help the guys. Like, I wasn't the actual reporter, no. I was just behind-the-scenes guy. But, like, so, but you're covering...
The first year of the WNBA?
Yeah, Phoenix Mercury.
Wow. That was the only year they got a lot of press.
Cheryl Miller and...
Cheryl Miller has a little brother?
So, that was the summer... And basically what you do when you get into TV is, like, you're learning these skills, but then you have to make these it's basically like a tape, just like stand-up. Like, you got to
get a
yourself
reel?
Doing 5 minutes of, like, a fake broadcast, basically.
Like, while you're setting up?
You just ask these people, like, during their off time or whatever like that, like, hey, can I do, like, a fake you know.
And that's the internship process.
Like, it's kind of a demo tape. Well, during that process, like, they're supposed to teach you, like, how to edit and
stuff like that. It's like an apprenticeship.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
But you're just doing a lot of busy work, too, especially.
So then when they're like, all right, we already did our interviews. We're not going to do anything until the end of the game. And so you're like, hey, do you mind if in the third quarter if I go interview a fan? Just myself?
Yeah, or I did like a fake, like, hey, the first season of the Phoenix Mercury, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, and I was really bad. Like, okay. I still have, like, kind of a garble mouth sometimes. So I really worked hard at
mush mouth.
My broadcast skills.
Enunciations?
Yeah, yeah.
I have that bad. It's probably a great idea that he gummy bears on on an audio thing while I have mush mouth already. Go ahead.
So then I get this tape of me doing like a horrible sports cast. I was really bad at that
like
point.
A whole sports cast?
Yeah, you just have like well, tonight the Phoenix Suns face, blah blah blah, and then just use one of their tapes. But you're like actually on a set of a real station and stuff.
Oh,
like
cool.
That.
So it looks good.
Yeah, it looks good.
Okay.
It looks like you know what you're doing. And which I still didn't really. They still didn't really let me use the camera that much or anything. Like, I just know how to push record or whatever.
You sort of set it up. You're like, what's the angle? And like, I don't know. What kind of lens on there? I don't know, whatever's on there.
So, but I learned enough, and just being around that was interesting, you know. And so at the end of the internship, you basically have all these tapes that you're just going to send to stations, you know, because and it's harder than getting an acting job, because if you really do the math, there's basically 200 markets in the United States,
yeah.
And there's, what, 3 stations in each market, maybe?
Yeah.
So 200 times 3 and maybe 2 sports guys, so there's less than, like, 2,000 people in the whole country doing that job.
So if you're, like, a Wolf, what's his name? Who's that big
Wolf,
guy that used?
Wolf Blitzer.
Not Wolf Blitzer. Who was the guy that said, let's go to the videotape?
Oh, George Michael?
Oh, that was George Michael. But who was the other guy that was started before him? Both DC guys.
Oh. Huh. I don't know.
So let's just say George Michael. If you're George Michael, just to stand out like that and become a national guy. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Wow. You're like, that's the most success you
well,
can get.
Well, anything network, yeah. Especially before ESPN. That's
yeah.
Like a huge deal. And even all those guys, like if you're top 20 market, that guy in Phoenix is making bank. He's making
he
six
just died,
figures
George Michael,
easy.
Right?
Yeah, a few years ago.
Yeah, I think Wilbon wrote an article about him and I cried when I read it.
Really?
Yeah, that's how ingrained he was in DC sports. Like, he was the guy on Sunday night, you watch
yeah,
a George
yeah.
Michael sports machine.
Yeah, you should not get to see any of those, like, videos that you see on YouTube or anything
mm-hmm.
that ESPN
Yeah, there was no YouTube.
On. Like, you just see the
plays of the week.
High school people and
yeah.
maybe some NBA stuff, but yeah.
He would give it all to you.
Yeah, that was awesome.
The craziness.
And even at that point, like, you know, I was super interested in, like, video. Like, I liked, like, we would make highlight films of our basketball games in high school and like
I'm gonna do that for the Comedy Store softball team.
What's that? Yeah, and it was
I was like, why is nobody setting up a camera and making a sweet highlight reel? We have like 2 good catches a game.
Right, and just get some.
Bad, could have Madonia shattering his leg.
Bad '90s music
behind
it. Final Countdown. Uh-huh. So then, yeah. So you just basically you got a bunch of these tapes. And you're like, you're aiming for, like, it would probably be pretty easy to get, like, a behind-the-scenes job, like, as an editor or maybe a cameraman or, like, some kind of, like, late-night producer.
That'd be cool.
But to be an actual, like, guy on the air is
a
huge long shot.
Yeah.
Even if you want to go to Montana, there's still a guy.
Kind of like being
like,
a working comedian.
What's that?
Kind of like being a working comedian.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a pretty long shot.
And yeah, and it was
probably
like,
even longer because there's a finite amount of spaces available for those guys.
Right, right.
Comics are unlimited. If everybody wants to be a comic,
to get a
be.
Legitimate job. So that's what So I just drove around. So you're basically aiming like maybe the last 70 smallest markets.
Phoenix
in the
has 8 million people in it.
Yeah, Phoenix was a
that's
huge
a big
market.
Market.
They
okay.
were like 17 at that point. So there's no way I'm getting a job there.
Right.
So like there was
the big markets. Those are the jobs that pay better.
Yeah,
and
those are experienced.
People.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it is a very, like, you know, TV is a very, like, somebody was talking about, like, it's like being an army brat. Like, I think TV and radio are both like that. Like, it's like, all right, you're going to start in Reno, and then you're going to work your way up to Sacramento, and then
oh,
you're
really?
Going to move to Las Vegas.
Like, that's the
and then,
path.
Yeah, so you're just in these different markets for a couple years getting experience, you know,
wow.
like when you ever see, like, the Howard
Yeah, there
Stern.
Are, there's guys that come on all the time. It's, I guess, less in L.A. because that's a big market, but or something. Come on, go for a couple years, then leave. And I'm like, oh, I guess I got fired or something.
Right.
But really, they just moved on. They got a better job somewhere else.
Or, yeah.
More responsibility.
Yeah, and it's just like, and it's very seldom that somebody just stays in like one of those, you know, little bitty markets or.
That was awesome. That was the awesome about George Michael.
Yeah.
He stayed right there for decades.
And that was like his own national show, too. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't have to like go anywhere else to do it.
Yeah, he could stay right there.
And he had the machine right there.
And he had
there.
The machine. You can't transfer the machine. The machine was the size of my whole living room. It was just a gigantic Doctor Who style, like, massive compartment in the middle of his. And he would just touch a giant button and then a video would pop up.
Can't have the Ari comedy machine? Is that what we're just watching on your TV? You're just pushing buttons?
Yeah. It wasn't even a special. It was just didn't do anything, the machine. It was just this thing that looked like a machine. It would just have buttons for no reason.
Yeah, he had bad, like, track and field buttons.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
So you just got these tapes. So I'm sending tapes to, like, Yuma, Arizona, and, like, Fresno.
To just try to find some
Bakersfield.
Sort of job.
Like, those are, like, within the realm of what.
Like, they have
job.
Their own local news in Bakersfield? Or
yeah,
Yuma?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So those are, like, those markets that you hear about. But still, like, I'm still, like, you know, I'm thousands
Somebody
of miles
Somebody just left there.
Home.
They need a new guy.
I just have my car and my stuff, and I'm just driving around until I find a job, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
So it's, like, kind of crazy that I was just, like,
How old were you? 22?
22, yeah. Wow. So just to have that kind of like...
That's an amazing freedom that you give up at some age.
And it was so weird. Like, I remember the first night I went to Vegas... Like,
could you do that now?
I don't think so.
No, me neither.
Yeah.
I could then.
I mean, I don't know if it's being dumb or having the confidence.
It's not hostile with other people? No. Yeah, at some point you just get... Maybe it's because you were dumb back then, too. Yeah. And I would just... Yeah.
And it did happen super, like, it was like, I drove to Vegas the first night from Phoenix, because I remember the hotel rooms were, like, $22. Like, mm-hmm. On a Monday night, you could stay at, like, the Riviera for, like, $22 or
wow.
something. And this was, like, 97.
The only negative is you have to stay at the Riviera.
Yeah, yeah. But still, at that point, I'm, like, a room.
Did you ever do that room when it was a room?
Yeah, yeah.
So hellish.
Oh, so bad.
A week. I paid $1,000. So much money.
And everyone always tell you, like...
You got to eat free for the whole week.
By the fourth day, you'll want to jump out the window. I was like, no, it's Vegas. Like, I that's what I dreamed of, like, making $1,000 and doing two shows a night.
Yeah.
But then, like, Thursday, you're like, holy shit, I got to
get
out of here.
I'm so bored.
Yeah. I want to go to McDonald's and write. Like, I got to get out of this building.
Get out of... Yeah. Because you eat in the dungeon, you eat with the employees, you never have to leave the Riviera, the shitty Riviera.
Yeah, if I have to see the people that are losing their life savings here.
Me and Renazisa got banned from there.
Really?
Yeah, we still don't know what it was. Me, Renazisa, and Caparillo went together.
No idea.
And then the year after, was like, hey, let's do that again. That was a really fun time. Caparillo just started headlining. I think Renazisa just gotten punked or something, so it was like, eye open. It was we were all buddy. We played poker all night long. Like, every night. And then the year, they're like, they say Cap can do it, but you and Ari aren't welcome.
Was it that,
we cannot figure out what it was.
Isn't it the dude from The Sopranos is, like, the guy that's, like, calls all the shots?
Not Pitka. What was his name?
Sharippa?
Steve Sharippa, yeah. But he wasn't even there anymore. He was just collecting a paycheck.
Right.
I heard that guy, he collected a paycheck for booking that room even after he was on The Sopranos.
Yeah,
he was
like,
fuck it, why give up a good job? It's 100 a week.
Well, supposedly he still owned the room or something, or owned it. Oh,
really? Yeah. I just thought he was the booker for them.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, but the only thing I figured out is Renazisi made Xeroxes of the free drink tickets they give you.
Mm-hmm.
They gave you two free drink tickets. And Harris Pete, the old Dory, I got the idea. I was like, just Xerox that shit. And now you have drinks all over the casino for free the whole week. And so we're like, okay. So Steve just made like a book of them. All
right. So and I just, like, figured out why he got banned.
No, that's why Steve would get banned. But why me? I didn't do him. That was him.
Aiding and abetting.
What?
Aiding and abetting. Isn't that a crime?
But then Caparillo should have gotten banned too.
Oh, what he was
trying to get any credits.
Was
he didn't
have funnier
any
than you guys at that point?
Yep. Sure was. That might have come into play a little bit.
So counterfeiting drink tickets would get you banned?
I also was like 1 minute late to one of the shows. It might have been individual reasons. I got one there. Oh, I got off stage a minute late, and they were like, they looked at their clock, like, what does it say? And I was like, 8:17. They're like, what time are you supposed to get off? I'm like, 8:15. I was like, oh, this is a real problem. Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, we expect you on at 8:00 even and off at 8:15 even. We don't care how you're doing. Middle of a joke.
Yeah.
And then I told, all right, next comic up.
And it's a union thing. Like that. Yeah. That's why. Like even if Seinfeld was there, like keep it at 35.
They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
We're for the casino.
And it was so bad. Like the people that were working there at that point. Like, you know, I'd done like a couple TV spots. I wasn't like a huge deal, but I was like, I was MCing. Yeah. And the feature was a guy who was just an impressionist.
Everybody that went had this experience when they went for the first time. They're like, they didn't know me, so I had to open. And the guy who went on last was like this old, like he'd been doing comedy forever, kind of shitty. And the middle guy was super shitty. Mm-hmm. He was always super shitty in the middle. And they've just been there for 20 years.
But the maddening thing is like, you know, even impressions are kind of hacky. Like there's guys that do a good job, but this guy, all he did is impressions like with no jokes.
Ugh.
So he was just an impressionist, which they don't really have those kind of guys anymore.
No. You have to do jokes with the
So, like, he's doing just impressions, so, and then...
Hi, I'm Tom Cruise. This is what I sound like. Yeah. Tom Cruise.
Or Ray Romano or something like that. Or
whoever that's supposed to sound
and
like.
And then the headliner guy was, like, a big hack, too. And so they're kind of arguing about, like, who can do the Crocodile Hunter and, like, because they're doing the same six impressions.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what the fuck am I doing here? And I just remember the one, the impressionist guy... Like, he's doing Al Pacino, so you're just wondering where the hoo-ha thing is going to come in.
That was everybody's impression, though. Hoo-ha!
And I just remember, this made me laugh, like, hysterically every single time. Like, his closer was, like,
where is it gonna be?
The Al Pacino cooking show, and he was just like, you cook with chocolate and Kaluha. And that was like...
And that's where he threw it in.
That was like the closing thing. I was like, this is so fucking bad that it's genius. Like, it's making me laugh every single
like
time.
Neil Hamburger bit or something. Like, are you intentionally being this bad?
So, yeah. So that was the first night. So I stay at the Riviera, and then the next night, I think I go to Fresno, and I'm at like two stations, and then I drive to Redding, California. And they didn't have any jobs advertised, but I dropped off a tape. And I met with the news director, seemed like a really cool dude. And
how many job like applications must they get?
Well, was the thing, like even back then it was like
it's not like a waitressing job where everyone just drops off resumes and whatever.
It's like it's one of those things where it's like, hey, here's my thing. If anything opens up, let me know because they don't have openings.
So I'm
like,
desperate and I need a job horribly.
Like if you live in town.
It's a poor negotiating tactic.
Yeah. If you live in town or something, they'll like but they get all these free interns, like, and there's people, like, even when I was working there, there's guys that, like, would have done that job for free. Like, they just wanted to do it.
Yeah, I bet.
So they can pay you nothing, and they pretty much do. Like my,
just like comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, we'd work for free.
The more
how many people in the audience?
Yeah.
Over 100? Like, if I could pay you $5 to get that spot,
right?
I would have at certain points.
Yeah. So it was, but at that point, you just want a job, so I got... They offer me, they're like, hey, we don't have a sports job per se, but we have this job in our bureau in Chico that you can cover sports for the weekend, and then you have to do a couple days of news reporting, and it was like $20 a week, or 20 hours a week at $5 an hour.
Wow.
So I was like, insane, but I'm like, all right, I'll take it.
For 100?
It was, yeah, pretty much. But that was when I think I found, like, a studio apartment in Chico for $3.95 or something. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm not...
You can make your rent?
Not quite making it.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's $100 a week.
Yeah, yeah. So it was insane. It was an insane thing to do. But this was the even funnier part.
It's got to be sports and regular?
Yeah, they kind of, like, blended that in. And the funny part was I had, like, the demo tape, and they're just watching that, and they're not even interested in, like... So do you know how to work a camera? And I was like, sure, yeah.
And you still didn't know?
No, I didn't know.
And they wanted you to do that stuff too.
What's that?
They're like, we don't have a guy that's going to run.
Because that's what they want is like those little markets. Like in Phoenix, they have a guy that just is the cameraman. But if you're a reporter there, like you gotta shoot your own video. You got to edit your own video. You got to like do the report. Like they call it a one-man band. Like you got to know how to do everything. So for those kind of things, it's really a great experience because you learn how to do everything like from the ground up. Like you learn how to fix cameras, you learn how to fix editing equipment, you know, fix a copier.
And so like, you learned it all while you were doing it?
Yeah, so I get this job in the bureau, which is like...
What's it?
Chico.
The Chico Bureau. This sounds like the worst episode of the X-Files of all time.
And it
I have to check in with the Chico Bureau.
And it was like the setup of it was... So Reading is the main station with all the big studio and all that stuff. And, you know, there's a sign of professionalism. You know, it's like ABC. It's like a legitimate station. But the Bureau is like... It's a half a house. Like, it's a one-level house. There's a cardboard Channel 7 in the window. There's a guy he's a salesman. He sells, like, computer spots.
Yeah.
But he's, like, I find out he's, like, selling computer equipment, like, on the side.
Really? So, like, from the office?
Yeah, yeah. And we got no boss. And the only other guy in that bureau is that there's a news report full-time guy. So basically, and he's like 50, and I find out that he's living in the bureau. Like,
really?
Yeah, because it's like a house.
Just upstairs somewhere?
No, there's no upstairs, man.
Oh my God.
There's two rooms. The left room is our desks, and I kind of noticed that his stuff is kind of everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then in the other one, it's like, it's a studio. Like, there's lights and a camera and like a background, but it's just like where like Osama bin Laden would have, like, recorded his... Like, it's just professional enough to, like, get the job done, but, like... And so then I see in the back room, there's, like, the bathroom and a couch and, like, everything else this guy owns. Like...
He just said, fuck it, why don't I just move in here?
Well, I think he was kind of, like, didn't think I would be able to tell, and then he's like, you know, I'm just, having a rough patch or whatever, you know, I'm just going to be staying here for a little while.
Wow, he fully admitted it.
And then it was the same thing. It was like, I don't want to make any waves. This is my first day here. Like, what am I? I'm like, hey, that's cool with me, I guess, you know?
Okay.
And so, but then you don't realize, like, you're trying to work and, like, this guy's showering.
Well, like, you should have reported it.
Shaving and
stuff.
But you're
like, okay.
And so then not only does he not have a house, he doesn't have a
shaving in the back while you're like, dude, we're trying to work.
And that's that one man show that I'm doing, the unprofessional. That's my first live report was done while he was like sleeping on the couch, slightly to the left of the camera. Like, my first, like, I'm excited, but there's a guy, a homeless guy, like on the couch,
right,
like,
next
sleeping.
To you.
Yeah, yeah.
Is any of this stuff online?
There's one like promotional video that has a few of the things on there.
Promotional video for what? Of you?
Just for the show, because I'm doing the one person show in Montreal and Toronto, and we've done it in Hollywood a few times. But yeah,
you doing where? Montreal and Toronto.
Yep.
Where are you doing Montreal? St. Catherine Theater.
I think it's the Montreal Improv Theater the first time, and then the Comedy Bar in Toronto this time. I'm doing like stand up and everything there too. I'm doing the Comedy Nest and.
Oh, and then also your show?
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to be like a crazy few weeks. But it's like a whole another hour of, you know, it's just like, you know how you have all these kind of stories. And then this guy was like, hey, those are great stories. It'd be great if you ever had the video. I was like, I do. I got it somewhere. Yeah. So we dug up all these like horrible, like I used to do these, you know, stories about chili cook-offs and.
Really? Like
yo-yo
local
festivals and.
It's all just time fillers.
Well, no, they're real stories for there. And then, I mean, that's the whole problem is they're like, hey, we need
hilarious.
Four stories.
When you say that, I immediately assume like, what, just for campy factor? Or like, you're not going to really, I mean, who would ever want to know about that? And you're like, no, these people want to know.
Yeah, that's what they said. We need four stories. I was like, we're in Chico. Like, nothing's going to happen here today. I can already tell you that. Unless I like run my car into a building or something.
The new premiere of the new movie.
Yeah. Well, that was the one thing that's on the clip is I was just driving around and Titanic was just opening. So there's a big line around, you know, so I just get out and I start interviewing people
like that. Fuck it. We may as well get something.
Yeah. And everyone's all gaga. There's this old lady's like, I saw it yesterday. I'm going to see it today. I'm gonna see it tomorrow. And I was just like, you know, the boat sinks, right?
Did you really say that?
Yeah, like on TV news. And then the news director's like, yeah, you can't pick on the people that are watching the station. That's not really the way that we do things here.
He's like, I get it, badass. But
it's like, you know, there's a time there was like I had to just go to like a park where there was a shooting the night before. Mm-hmm. And like all these guys that look like they
live.
Did the shooting like are like, hey, put away that camera. I was like, okay, I'll see you later.
Really?
Yeah.
And you would just bolt.
And all the news people were like, no, you got to cover that story. Like, I was like, no, I don't. Like, why? I don't
like,
care.
I'm a human being. I don't give a fuck. I know there's no journalistic integrity here when I don't give a fuck.
I'm not Anderson Cooper. I want to be Bob Uecker.
Yeah, those people are like, yeah. That was your dream, is to be on, to be a SportsCenter anchor?
Yeah, I mean, that's what, I mean, don't get me wrong, there was some stuff that was like super interesting, like news-wise, to cover, like, you know, but most of the stuff was like, they just tried to make it more important than it was. Like, there's that, I did like, they're like, oh, this is like a really in-depth story about recycling. And there's a big Hollywood actor coming in to, like, you know,
would that be big
wants
news?
To save the planet. Yeah, yeah. And so I'm sent to cover the story, and it ends up being that Robert Hayes guy.
Who's that?
Who played Stryker on Airplane. Remember that movie, Airplane?
Yeah.
Who was, like, hilarious and super deadpan.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, doing
Wasn't Stryker the main dude?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
He's like, surely you can't be serious.
I have a drinking problem.
Yeah.
I just drink out of the wrong side of the glass.
So, like, he's, like, answering questions to these people, like, just completely fucking with him. And everyone's taking it serious. So then I start asking him, like...
He's,
you know,
fucking with the
reporters?
Yeah,
he's just like... They're like, when did saving the planet become your number one cause? And he's just like, well, life is important. Reasons are important. People are important. Just like that guy driving the FedEx truck. He's just working... living with reasons. Like, he's just saying, like, gibberish, you know? He's like,
really?
Nothing important, but he's still deadpan. So then I'm like, you know, is this the... I understand the production budget is in the millions. Like, just completely messed with him. He's like, yeah, we've got, you know, Paul Newman, Steve McQueen, like, all this kind of stuff. And so we're just going back and forth. And I end up, like, putting clips from an Airplane in this news story, which... is completely illegal. Like, you can't just put, like, clips from movies on broadcast news. So I'm like, I'm still
like, it'll
like,
be cool. It'll be better.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, it was just that thing. I was like, I was pretty bad at it, but I was like, it was with good intentions.
And how long did you stay there?
So this is the thing. So I stayed there for a little over a year, and but me and that Rick guy just weren't getting along. Like, just him living there and, like, breaking everything was horrible. So I'm like, I can't work with this fucking guy anymore.
Yeah.
And they offered me a full-time job at the bureau, and I was like, no, I don't want
it. Someone's living there right now, so
yeah, yeah.
It's not really open.
And so I finally told him that, and then we got in like another fight. Like, Rick lost his shit.
You and the Rickster?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so they had to call the news director down, and they're just like, well, you guys obviously can't work together. And so I'm thinking I'm getting fired.
Yeah.
And if he's getting fired, he's gonna kill me, because this is a guy that's like on his last...
Oh yeah, he's already living there.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So then he ends up saying, like, well, I mean, the one thing that happened was the sports anchor just left this morning, so I guess we can just give you that job, and you can move
to
Reading.
So there was a sports anchor?
There was at the station, but it was a job that was taken.
Oh, so they didn't have
it. And
any,
so
okay.
When all this shit went down, that guy, like left, like, out of the blue, and so they're like, well, this...
Over that?
No, he just left, like, on his own. Like, this is in Reading. And so while me and Rick are arguing, and he's deciding which one of us to fire, he's like, well, I guess I can just give you the sports anchor job.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, do that. That'll work out for everyone.
And so I'm like, yeah, I just failed upwards, man. Like, that was this. So I end up getting the sports anchor
just because
job.
You got in a fight with Rick?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So it was like, so then I'm doing, you know, I'm an official guy. Like, I got a clothing allowance from JCPenney.
Really? Because you have to look sharp?
Well, you have to wear a suit at least. So I still wore shorts and stuff, but I just had like the half suit.
Really?
Because we got $250, which isn't enough.
So you just wear the top?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real thing?
Yeah.
Didn't they used to do that on sports night?
Maybe they did, but yeah, that's a real thing, because I'm not wearing a suit to fucking work ever. So.
Okay. You're like, that's just not going to happen.
So, yeah, and so I did the 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock sports cast on Saturday and Sunday, and I had my contract was $16,500 a year. I was under contract for minimum wage.
$16,500?
And this is 1990.
Wow. You were under contract
yeah, yeah.
for minimum wage.
So if ESPN in theory offered me a job for $100,000, I couldn't take
You'd
it.
You'd be like, at this moment, I am under contract.
And that's the one thing that was giving me a glimmer of hope was Rich Eisen had just left from our station and went to ESPN like... The year before I...
Oh,
I
so you're
there.
Like, that's a thing that might...
So I'm like, all right, this can happen. And, but it was fun. It was a great experience, man. It was like, but then you just learn that, like, wow, I'm developing opinions, and I'm kind of being, I have a sense of humor, and I'm making this kind of entertaining, But that's not what they want on TV news at all. They want a guy that just reads the news and is...
Even sports? You
know. Yeah. I was kind of surprised by that.
Wow. Do they want you to do it with any personality?
Not really. Like, because it's got to be their sense of humor, you know?
Right,
and it
lame.
Can't be mean-spirited at all. So, like...
I saw Seth Rogen. Is that his name? Who's the...
Myers?
No, that's a broadcaster here, local.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about that guy. Something Rogen.
Yeah. Maybe Seth Rogen. I don't know what it is. Nah, it's not Seth. Whatever it is. But, he just said something about their barbecue that the main newscasters were having.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like... And he was making some lame old person joke, and I'm like, oh, you're just an old rich person.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just a guy who probably has a pool in his, like, five-bedroom house.
Yeah.
I don't relate to you at all.
Right, yeah. It's like, there's always, like, the charming, like, kind of old weather person.
Uh-huh.
And, like, that. But it's hard to be, like, if you're an anchor, you got to be, like, that was the whole thing is, like, we had all these anchors that wanted to be serious, but they were just boobs. You know, like, they would try.
How many of those people do you have? Just good looking.
There was all the women are good looking and that's all they care about. A lot of them in those smaller
just
markets.
Be able to read like, and
hey,
look well.
I want.
Look good.
I hope my makeup's good for this murder story. Like, there's no. Like, I would be like devastated if I saw like a murder scene. But
there's like
just
more blush.
Like, hey, I want. I just want to look good on this for my tape.
Wow.
And,
women.
So there was a. There's guys like that too, of course. You gotta have the hair right.
I guess it's just vanity.
And so there's like a guy, I remember this used to be like a big premise for jokes, but it was completely true back then was, you know, they'd have to like do all these cheesy transitions, you know. And I remember there was one time they did like JFK Jr. just died, so they're showing like a montage of all the stuff he did, and
uh-huh.
one of the female anchor was like, you know, when you see all the stuff he's working toward, you just have to ask yourself, what if? And then the male anchor goes, yeah, and what if this rain continues? He goes, Brian will have that forecast coming up next in weather.
I never noticed the transitions.
And it
but
was
they
like,
do that, don't they?
Oh, dude.
They do those transitions all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I never noticed that.
And it's so,
they're the lamest.
And that's the thing is like...
Why don't they just go, very sad, very sad. Well, let's go to weather.
They should, like the guys who know what they're doing do.
Just do that.
But they usually, you have somebody in your ear saying, we got 5 seconds, throw it to weather, throw it to weather. Uh-huh. Like, that's what those people are yelling in your earpiece.
They're
like,
just looking for a way to get out of it.
Because that's what they would tell me, like, hey, you're going long, or we don't have this tape.
Oh.
Fill 2 minutes.
Why wouldn't you have a tape? Why would you bring something up without a tape?
That's what I mean. No, that's
because
that
they
kind
think
of shit happens all the time, because you got a 19-year-old guy.
He's supposed to bring it, he's not here yet. He's
and
supposed
he
to be
can't
here four
find
minutes
the tape.
Ago. Yeah,
and he's like, "Yeah, we don't have the tape." So
they actually have to hustle and move around and stuff.
And it's
fly.
Live TV, so that prepared me for anything, you know, more than stand up. Like, just hey, you gotta.
That's live TV every night.
You gotta fill time.
That was 5 days a week.
Well, the job was 5 days a week, but yeah, I anchored all the newscast on Saturdays and Sundays. So that was kind of like my playhouse because it was still the weekends and there's no bosses there, so like, you know, I'm a East Coast sports fan, so like,
yeah.
I'm like a Yankees fan and a New York Giants fan.
Did you write
fan.
Your copy?
Yeah, I did
so
do
would
everything.
So you cover
man.
Just those teams?
I would cover my favorite teams.
Fucking
and then,
New Yorkers. You're always so fucking egocentric. Everything about New York has to be the most important thing.
But I do remember one year the Yankees weren't in the World Series. I was like just showing the scores. Like I didn't care. I was such like a.
You're like a 42.
I'm very bipartisan. Like I appreciate a good game and I appreciate just sports now. But back then I was like still a real fan. So I was just like, yeah, I would totally have my favorites and stuff,
yeah.
Which is ridiculous looking back on it now. It's like, well, this is my wasn't it like the Larry David. A sketch supposedly he wrote for Saturday Night Live was like the weatherman who only did the weather where his family lived. Like
really?
That's kind of what it was. It was like, I'm only doing the teams that I care about.
And they wouldn't bother you. They'd be like, all right, whatever. Who cares?
Well, it's just, it was just under the radar enough and I wasn't making enough waves and I was like the, you know, basically the third string sports guy.
Did you have any fans or anything that people just sort of like keyed into that
it
fun
would,
you're sound like you're having?
You know what? It's really tough. Like, even when I started doing stand-up, it's like, oh, it's that fucking news guy. Like, it's hard to lose that moniker because it's like, you none of those guys are funny. You know what I mean?
And how come they hired you? They didn't care if you look good. No offense, but you know what I mean.
Hey, come on, man. Sorry. I have boyish charm.
I'm gonna get for one of my podcasts, I'm gonna talk to Jeff Dye and maybe Jeff Keith too about, about being beautiful boys. Just beautiful,
have
beautiful
girl
men.
Faces.
Yeah, they're just stunning. Everyone just like swoons over them. But like, we're not that. So it's very clear. Where nobody looks at us and goes, you should be a news anchor. You should be sports anchor, television. Yeah, behind the desk.
Well, that's the goal of everything I did was just to prove people wrong, I guess. It's like, well, why not? I got to be better looking than people in Reading. You know, it's like, I'm not an LA sports anchor, but I'm not, you know.
You're like, I'm a Reading 6, at least.
But I think, you know, that was the thing is like back then, and that's what I, there's no way I would have done comedy if I hadn't done the TV stuff first.
Just because it gave you experience, like thinking
and,
on the fly.
And confidence in speaking in front of people and, oh man, I mean, you can't, there's a parade outside.
But there's something about just experience where it does give you confidence.
Yeah, I mean...
Where it's like, whatever, it'll be fine. I'll just go on stage.
And to have confidence at all and just like, and not being afraid to fail. And I know that sounds like super cheesy, but like people do get to the point where they only want to do this stuff that they're good at and they don't want to look bad doing anything. And it's just like, you really have to just have no fear with most stuff. Because even now, somebody's like, hey, do you want to go snowboarding? I've never been snowboarding. Let's try it. You know, let's do it. Let's, you know, you can't be.
It's fun to tackle some of those things because your natural inclination is just be like, No, that's not something I do.
Yeah, the only thing that I'm
it's like try some shit.
Yeah, except for food. That's my only thing.
That's right. What you don't eat? You only eat eggs and bacon.
I've never had eggs in my life.
Oh yeah,
I've never had coffee.
Why not?
It's like texture and smell. I think
coffee. I don't like coffee. I don't like the taste of it.
There's a long list of things like that. That might be a TV show. It's just me trying.
Different
normal
foods you've
foods
never had
for the first time.
What about cake? You ever have cake?
What's that?
You ever have cake?
Cake? Are you serious?
Oh, that's got eggs in it.
Well,
no, you had to have eaten stuff with eggs in it.
Oh, of course. Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying like an omelet or scrambled eggs.
You've not had it.
No. Even salmon, like just.
Salmon's not an egg, by the way.
No, but I'm saying stuff like that. Like there's just random like things that I've just never eaten. Like I just started eating rice.
Are you grossed out by them?
Yeah, I think so. Like guacamole. I've never eaten guacamole.
Why are you grossed up by guacamole?
It's green and mushy.
Okay.
None of it makes sense. I mean, there's no...
Oh, you're fucked up, huh?
There's no rhyme or reason to it. But there's no... It's not like, oh, I'm doing this for political reasons or for I'm a vegetarian. It's like, no, I just don't
So the occupation of Rwanda has ended. I will not eat eggs. I, Paul Morrissey, will not eat eggs.
But don't you get in the mode where it's like, you know what, I'm have time to eat one meal today, and I don't want it to be experimental.
Oh, I will. If I see something on the menu that I've never eaten, like if they had Lion Burger somewhere, I'd be like, I'm getting that.
You'll do it?
Yeah, even if I'm in the mood for something else. If I see something I've never eaten before, I'm like, that's going down my mouth.
Because you want to try it?
I want to have tried it, yeah. When I drove cross country to get out here, we did it in like 5 days, me and my soon-to-be roommate. We met up in like Nashville. I came from Maryland. He came from Florida, and then we just caravaned. Mm-hmm. I would drive over the speed limit, and he would hotbox and smoke pot the whole way. And so he would drive the speed limit, and then I'd find a place up ahead. We'd share a hotel room, and then just keep going. But I stopped in Gore, Oklahoma, to watch Maryland play basketball in the NCAA tournament, and I couldn't find a bar that had CBS that had a fucking TV on. I just turn it to CBS; it'll be on, and I finally found this place. They only had it was some restaurant on a river in Gore, Oklahoma, population of like 150. In their back room, they had it. And I ate frog legs. They had frog legs. I was like, fuck yeah, give me those. And they were so goddamn good.
Yeah.
They were fresh out of the river, fucking behind the restaurant, the little creek or something. And it was just so good.
That's so
funny.
But it's
only because I've never had frog legs before.
Well,
I'm
trying to get, I'm trying to be better about that. Because there's a guy that I went to high school with that's an Iron Chef now. Like, he's like a big...
Really?
Like, he lost to Bobby Flay. His name's David Bull.
Fuck Bobby Flay. Put that on the record.
Fuck him. He totally whooped his ass in this show, too. And he's like a guy. And I have another buddy that has restaurants in New York. And they're just... And I was like, this is my dream. When I get famous enough, you'll design the restaurant. And then David will do the menu. And they're both like, what are we going to serve, chicken nuggets? Because they already know, like, yeah, Paul's not eating anything. So I have to break down some berries eventually and try some shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. If something's really good, like we went to San Francisco, me and Jimmy Dore, and he's like, I heard that this place, Mama's, has the best Monte Cristo sandwich ever.
Yeah, then you got to get that.
Yeah,
then
so I did that.
Okay.
But
yeah, that's another thing. If any place is known for something, mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I'm going to try it. I at least want to know what I'm talking about if I say it's shitty.
But like sushi, do you eat sushi?
Mm-hmm.
See, like that stuff.
What are you in fucking 1981? What are you, Archie Bunker from 30 years ago?
I just want my food cooked. I don't know.
I don't like it. It's just so stupid.
I'm not crotchety, but I was like, I just don't eat it. I don't know.
So do you eat like raw, like an apple? Would you eat?
Yeah.
That's not cooked.
I don't know.
Do you know in Judaism, in the Torah?
I told you, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
There's killing laws for animals you can eat, kosher animals. You have to slice it with a super, super sharp knife between like two bones in your neck, two mm-hmm. very specific bones in your neck. And if you don't kill it like that, it's not kosher. You got to throw away the meat or sell it to a non-Jew, piece of shit non-Jew. but there's no killing laws for fish. You can take a fish and just swallow it live.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that with a cow. That's how little Jew God thinks of fish. So you don't have to cook them. It's okay. They're just like an apple.
Because it smells like fish?
Yeah, that's the ones that are made in fisheries. Swimming their own shit.
So are we meandering now? Or are we
yeah, we're meandering. Let's go back. Let's go back. The meanderings usually happen in the middle, depending on how high I'm getting. Where were we? How did we get back?
I got the anchor job in Reading.
Okay.
So it was awesome.
But like this is just sports.
Yeah. I had to do one day of news. That's how they snuck it into me, and I hated it. I had to work one day 9 to 5 as like a regular news guy, and it completely sucked. But everything else was cool. Like I covered the Sacramento Kings when they went from like I was there for Bobby Hurley's last year,
really,
and Mitch Richmond to like when they got Chris Webber and Jason Williams. And
I fucking hate they got Chris Webber. The Bullets traded him because he smoked pot.
Yeah,
that's why they traded him. Because Abe Pullman was such a backwards fucking owner, and Wes Unseld had the longest tenure of any coach in the NBA with 9 seasons of not going to the playoffs. Nine straight seasons.
Changed their name.
Yeah. Changed their name because, like, well, you know what? It doesn't. And fine, whatever. That's probably the night. But Weber got caught smoking pot. The whole NBA smokes pot.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, and they traded him for like nothing.
Right.
And said, Juwan will be our man. Juwan Howard. Good luck, idiot. Never been the man anywhere.
Yeah, so...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that was the...
Gets me angry.
That was... Because they went from, like, nobody gave a shit about the Kings at all.
So suddenly,
like I could just
contenders.
Walk in. Oh. Until now, it's like everyone wants to go to these games, and the Maloofs buy the team and all that kind of stuff. So that was kind of a fun time to be there. And then...
Where's Reading? NorCal?
Reading's like an hour and a half. It's probably 2 hours north of Sacramento. But Chico's like an hour... So there was, like, times where I would go down there from Chico, too.
And Sacramento was your hometown sports team, I guess, right? Or were people...
Well, that was a close... Like, everyone was either San Francisco or... yes.
Okay.
So... And then, you know, the Raiders. So I got to... Like, John Gruden just got the Raider job, so I covered, like, Raiders camp and stuff. So that was pretty cool. So I got to do a lot of fun stuff. But it was still, like... You know, you're in Reading. You have to live in Reading. Like, it's one of those things where it's like...
How much of my life am I going to mortgage
for
this?
It's like, how many years of your 20s do you want to spend in Reading?
That's what we were talking about before we started doing the podcast, where it's like, how long are you going to struggle in comedy before you eventually, like, you're a man. Buy something for yourself.
Right.
Do something. This is you now.
Well...
And you're trying to make it. Yeah, how long are you going to try to make it in Reading?
Well, but you...
If there was, like, a 3-year plan where, like, and when you do 3 years, we're shipping it to New York.
Well, here's the whole...
Then it'd be okay.
The funny thing was, so I started doing stand-up just out of the blue. I came back. I had to fly into Sacramento to get back to, like, Chico or Reading.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why I stopped in, but I stopped into a comedy club. And I'd only been into one comedy club before in my life. Like, that's what...
Really?
I'm from upstate New York. There's no comedy clubs. Like, I was a huge, like... And my friends always ask me about this, like... I love Saturday Night Live. I loved all these comedians, and I have, like, even now I have, like a perfect memory of, like, if you play, like, an Eddie Murphy special or, like, Sam Kinison from one of those Dangerfield specials,
yeah,
it'll just start clicking my head, and I'll know every word. Like
really?
At that time, I didn't think I was that huge a fan, but then, like, no, you totally liked it way more than everybody else. Like, you taped every episode of, you know, Saturday Night Live. You taped every Young Comedian special. Like, you were a fanatic. And I was like, I thought everybody liked comedy, you know, or Letterman or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
So then I realized, like, oh, I'm trying to be funny on these sportscasts. Like, I should be.
Yeah, that's good.
I should try to, like, do the stand-up or at least see it. So I saw, like, I went to the old Cobbs in San Francisco and I saw, like, you know, Patton Oswalt and Gene Pompa and a bunch of those guys were still around there and they were pretty funny.
Oh, that's cool.
And then Sacramento, there's this open mic night, literally, and I just walked in and this lady was like, hey, do you want to go up tonight? And I was like, no, I'm just here
to watch
a show. And she's like, well, we're starting like a class, so if you want to learn like how to do it or something.
And that worked? That pitch worked on somebody?
It did.
Wow.
And it was so random. And the craziest thing was, so it was like Monday or Tuesday nights, which I was working the weekend, so I had Monday and Tuesdays off. And
yeah.
So I did stand up like once a week for like a year without anybody knowing.
Immediately, you just started.
I didn't tell anybody.
Wait, would you drive to Sacramento once a week?
And the woman who teaching Laughs Unlimited.
Oh, yeah, that's like the one that's like in a better area of town, right?
Yeah, old Sacramento.
Yeah, Punchline is in a bad area of town.
Yeah, and the woman who was teaching the class, I mean, it sounds lame.
Roseanne Barr?
No. It sounds lame when people talk about classes, but it's like, hey, if you can get a guaranteed show once a week, like, I would do it, you know what I mean? If you're
so
like,
would you do the class
town.
Then the open mic?
Yeah, you would do the class. You would like practice your stuff before everybody, and then you do the actual show. So you'd kind of.
I don't have a problem
through.
With classes. I have a problem with taking those classes. I have a problem with the classes telling their students like, now you're a professional comedian,
right? Right.
You've graduated, yeah. And it's like, we gotta
do it. But
this
was purely like I was like, hey, I have no inclination to like make this a career. I just think this will help me be funnier, like on
I can see
TV,
that.
or at least be more camera. Since Ari says I'm ugly for. A sports anchor.
Your TV ugly.
So
okay, here's the deal. If you go to a commercial audition and they say, okay, we want you your character is going to go on a date with this, is going to be walking to a bar and there's a super hot chick there. Just walk up to her and then she's got all the lines. Are you thinking like we're probably going to hit it off? Or are you thinking I'm the joke here clearly that someone so ugly could even date someone so hot?
I'm Edward Norton after some time off is what. Or I'm a rock star after their prime.
Yeah, the reuniting tour where they're all too fat to do the same dances.
Somebody said I look like this guy from Rush, Alex Lifeson.
Wow, I wouldn't know that.
Like, oh, but he's like 50.
But not then. Now.
Now, yeah, you look like him now.
You look like a current Demi Moore.
But yeah, so then, but this woman ended up like. She was just like had a kid and moved to Sacramento for a few years, and she ended up like being a writer on the Ellen DeGeneres Show and writing for the Academy Awards and writing for the Wanda and George Lopez and everything. So like everyone that started.
So why'd
with
she move
me,
there? She just
went. She had a kid and got married and was just up there kind of raising a kid for a year or two.
Wow.
And so, but everyone that I kind of started with ended up moving to LA and like becoming a TV writer and stuff. And so.
Who else did you start with?
This guy, Jeff Cosgrave, Rick Mitchell, Andrew Norelli was, like, around there.
Okay.
And I knew a lot of, like, the Bay Area guys. Like, I think Ryan Stout I ended up doing a show with up there at some point. And,
did you eventually start going to San Francisco, too?
Yeah. I was just, like,
at some point, you're, like, comfortable enough, like, hey, can I do this anywhere else in the world?
Yeah.
And like, yes.
And I'm sure you got into this, too. Like, once I jumped into it, like, I saw every show. Like, I remember seeing Robin Williams, like, show up on Super Bowl Sunday. Like, I just went to a comedy club every night.
Oh, yeah,
like, I met, like, Tony Kameen, who was, super funny. Like, everybody that came through Sacramento, I'd go see.
Cool thing of being in one of those towns where you can see top-shelf guys only once a week.
Right.
You know, or twice a week. Although San Francisco is more good guys than most places.
And nobody would know, like, who the good people were still. It's still, like, now.
Yeah.
Like, I remember last
comedy
night.
Comedy nerds know, but only comedy
well,
nerds.
Well, remember last night we were talking about, like, who's had like three great hour specials. And I was like, well, I think Bill Burr is one of those guys that's close too.
Yeah.
And some guy was like, "Who's Bill Burr?"
I couldn't believe that when he said that last
but
night.
But it happens though.
Like, that guy's a comic.
And that's but that still happens. There's
wow.
like people that don't know who Brian Regan is.
I guess
people,
if, you know? If you don't like if you're not in clubs, I guess there'd be no way to know or watching TV.
And I don't like, wow. there's guys that like, you know, that I don't know about or
something. Yeah, when people ask me like if I'm on the radio or something or some interview, people ask me who the up and comers are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's your level of knowledge?
Because
mm-hmm. if you really don't know anything about comedy, then yeah, I would say go check out Bill Burr.
Right, right.
But like, if you knew a little bit, then I'd be like, yeah, he's not an up and comer. He's in this.
Right,
he's
right.
one of the best comics in the country.
But that is like insane to me because in, you know, like in the New York circles, it was like, you know, Geraldo, Gaffigan, Louis C.K., Attell, Tom yeah. Papa. It was like the same seven guys who are like
the
super
guys.
Awesome now.
Yeah.
But there's still people that didn't know Geraldo, you know,
right.
a
yeah.
couple years
somebody
ago.
Somebody has to come up.
Like, oh, he's the guy from The Roast. I was like, he was funnier before then. Like, that wasn't the
point. That wasn't
he's
the
not
good
only
part.
Funny on The Roast. But yeah, so the comedy thing kind of helped get me... Like, I got better and better.
Did you, I was going to say, did you get better on
the air?
On the camera,
air,
in front
but
of the
then
camera?
It... felt like more and more like, hey, I really don't want to do this for the rest of my life, you know? It's like,
oh, wow.
Because I was like, hey, this is fun the way I want to do it, but that's not how people usually do it, you know?
Do they keep trying to, like, censor you down a little bit?
Well, it was just like you can't – there's no real wiggle room, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you got to – the general manager's friend is playing in a handball tournament, so – cover this handball tournament and I'm
like that's not journalistically what I want to artistically what I want to get into and
that's,
like we don't give a fuck
that's sports or like you know I would have to do there was all these other corporate things which I could still do you know I have to do the Buzz's crab fresh catch of the day or the yeah
really
oh yeah
oh my god
so
that's
like,
so lame
yeah
how'd you do that with a straight face? How'd you
I didn't.
Just, like,
I
barf in your mouth.
Well, everyone thinks I'm sarcastic 99% of the time, whatever I say anyway. So even when I was trying to be sincere, my boss would be like, hey, you know, lighten up on the sarcasm a little bit. I was like, I'm being serious.
And you're like, I am faking it. I'm faking it as hard as I can.
I'm selling it, man. So, but it was like, it's, you know, all those skills, man. I mean, I can read a prompter. Like, it doesn't look like
oh,
a
yeah.
reading.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I see that in commercials or in, like, low-budget commercials or Saturday Night Live. You can see it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
People's eyes just moving back and forth
yeah,
following
yeah.
that prompter.
It's a skill, man, like, that to do that for a few years
How do you
and be
do
good
it? Do you
at
have
it.
To, do you have to, like, is there a secret to it or is it just a lot of practice?
It's a lot of practice and there's a lot of, like...
Is it reading ahead and sort of knowing what you're going
to
say?
I used to be able to, like, you could see enough of the page... to like just look at you know how like it's not complete memorization but you look at a page you're like okay I know what this kind
of
means
uh-huh.
and you can
so you
can
sort of
regurgitate
remember.
It you know when you need actual scores and stuff obviously you have to get those perfect but
yeah.
like if you're just like you know the San Francisco Giants have a 3-day you know or 3-game you know stretch in New York or something like you just kind of you know.
You know just, what you're going to say.
You just look at it once, and then you're like, okay, I got this.
Okay.
And it is that thing. It's like, you know, it's just like doing sets in comedy. Like, 5-minute set for a TV show, that's a specific skill.
Uh-huh.
45-minute set.
That's a different skill.
In a club is a different skill.
Yeah, similar, but
15 minutes. Like,
yeah.
they're all different things. So this sports cast was 4 minutes and 50 seconds. So, like, I could almost get to the point where, like, I knew – when I was getting close to the end of the time or when
yeah.
it was going too long. It's like, it's really weird how your head starts to kick in. It's like once you grasp that amount of time,
yeah, then
you know
you
what
just
you're doing.
Know what that amount of time
See,
is.
Even when you're headlining, you're like, oh, this is about 45
yeah,
minutes.
I know. When I don't see a like, light or when nobody lit me,
mm-hmm.
I'm always like, this feels like I'm supposed to be done right now. I don't know where this goddamn light is.
Yeah.
Somebody's not doing their job.
And it is so weird that like TV spots, you know, like Ferguson or Letterman,
yeah.
those are basically like the actual time in the TV, like producers lineups are 4 minutes and 50 seconds. That's what the sets are supposed to be.
Wow.
And that's what my sportscast was. And it's like,
four minutes. So you're,
yeah. Isn't that, it's kind of creepy. It's like, oh, so that's what I, you know, cause that's what I really tried to get good at when I was doing comedy.
Short sets.
Like,
yeah. There were always people that were good at showcasing with those 5-minute showcase sets.
And to not be like, a character though. Like,
right.
they're like, cause that's how I first started working is like, this guy's got really great 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was for like a long time. And then it's like, all right, you got to come up with another great 10 minutes.
You're like, another? Yeah. Why? I already have one. What do you mean?
And that's the tough part, man. It's like, that's why, you know, you talk about fear and, you know, there's still some of those guys. I think me and like Jimmy Dore was talking about that, you know, those headliners that were like, they had that day where it's like, they got the 45 minutes and they just put the pen down. They're like, all right, I'm done.
Good.
It's like, really? Finished. You're not going to write any more jokes?
Yeah, there are. It's so weird. And I guess they just got older and they stopped getting creative or something.
Or you just fear like something not working.
Yeah. Every time I write a joke, whenever it's like, I have to write a new joke, I'm always like, I don't know how the fuck I come up with jokes. I'm not going to be able to come up with another joke.
Right.
Another bit? There's no way.
Yeah.
I'm out. But they always keep coming, I guess.
And it's scary, and you have to find those certain places where you have that creative freedom and you feel comfortable not doing well. Because, I mean, that's the tough part about L.A. It's like you do the Comedy Magic Club or the Improv or, you know, you might only do these clubs every couple months. So it's
you sort of have to rock it out.
Yeah.
And Daniel Tosh can go down there and work out new stuff.
Right.
But it's like at some point, you're like, you have to show me your best shit right now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's time.
I've been here for 7 years and people still have no idea who I am. So if I happen to go off a night where somebody might want to see me.
I just started to learn that where it's like, I know you wanted the new stuff tonight, but there's a manager here to come see you. So scrap what you were going to do and do your fucking best shit.
Yeah.
Because one of those career sets. Just fucking do it.
And a lot of it is common sense, too. It's just like, all right, well, this is the time or place for... Especially if it's like a great crowd, you know what I mean? It's like, you wanna act like you belong here instead of just being like a selfish guy doing jokes. But I don't know, it's a fine line. You do get to that point where it's like, I'm sick of my jokes, I just wanna do something new.
Yeah.
And that's why the road is good.
I was talking to Robbie Prawl about it and all these couple of British comics who said write a new hour every year and then they take that on the road. It'll be like whatever, you know, Jimmy Carr Unplugged or whatever. The title will be take it on the road, and then the next year they come back, it's a whole new hour. I'm like, but where did they work out the new hour?
Yeah.
He goes, it's mostly writing and working out here or there in your few nights.
That's
in town.
Still tough. I mean, you still talk to people that saw Carlin and like, oh, I saw him do a horrible show. It's like, well, he was working on that like
stuff.
A play.
Yeah.
Like it was like he was memorizing that whole thing. And if you saw him, like if you see, like I see David Sedaris a lot.
Oh, really?
And
he's coming here next weekend, right? Or the weekend after? Or the last
weekend? Yeah. Yeah, I think he's doing some stuff out here.
I was going to call to see how much those tickets were, but then I forgot the number. They said it once on the fucking radio.
And he's great to see live, but this is what he does because he still lives in Europe. So he'll come to like the U.S. for 30 straight days. This is what he used to do anyway. I don't know if it's like the exact same parameters. But
David Sedaris will?
30 days in a row. No routing. Like he
doesn't live in the U.S.?
No.
Why? So he get married?
Well, that's what most of his stories are about, like him living in France or...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And not knowing how to speak and being uncomfortable and
I read
fish
Naked.
Out of water stuff.
It was all about him growing up, I guess.
Yeah. Me Talk Pretty One Day.
That's what I read.
That's great. That's the one about him learning French and stuff.
Then I read Naked. Okay.
Yeah. You should. It's really good.
Really?
And,
the one that had the... I've read this book, The Riviera. I'm remembering this now. Like 10 or 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was at the pool, at that shitty pool with all 85-year-olds reading. I thought maybe it was Meet Up Ready. Which is the one where he worked at a nudist colony?
That's Naked.
Okay, that's the one I read then.
You couldn't figure that out? Nudist colony and Naked?
I could have. Didn't. But if you gave me that same scenario a bunch of times, I bet a couple of those times I'd get it. But no, clearly I didn't.
And he's from my hometown. He's from Binghamton area.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought he was fantastic. And he's like... He brings like a comics approach to writing.
Oh, really?
Because he's so prolific. Like he comes to the U.S. like 30 days in a row. He'll go from like New York to Iowa to like he would play anywhere, especially back in the day. Now he gets to play like all great places. But if you saw him the first day of the 30 days, he would read like two, maybe three stories and then like a bunch of journal entries. But then at the end of those 30 days, like he had three or four of those stories like completely
worked
done
out.
And polished. And it's all trial and error.
Yeah.
And you think about like no writers get to have that luxury of testing. And who writes that tight? That I mean, he gets more laughs than most stand-ups I see.
Really?
And it's like, and it's pretty amazing.
I'm always wondering, even now, it's like working out new material at the Comedy Store, even just a workout club. It's like, I still feel bad. Like, if somebody comes to see me, it's like, that was shitty.
Right.
Like, yeah, I thought so too. But I've got to start getting this new shit down.
Yeah. I mean, I always wonder because, you know, obviously, like, you know, Gaffigan and Brian Regan, those guys, they're doing mostly theaters.
Mm-hmm. And, Where do they work out? I think they work out a bit or two here or there.
Well, obviously, Gaffigan is a guy that's always working spots, but where does Regan, like, work? Does he work stuff out? Like,
he's never in town.
In the theater? And he lives in Vegas or something.
I think he does. If he does, then he probably has a workout spot in Vegas if he wants to try a bit.
Right.
But I think it's just like, I was going to do an hour tonight. I'll do an hour and seven, and I'll try that new bit.
Well, I just remember, like, because and that was the thing about, like, putting the pen down. It's like, I think as you get older, you just get better at it and just know your voice more.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, and that's kind of the hope, because I remember when Gaffigan was getting really huge, and, like, he had taken a couple. I think he had told me maybe he's, like, hadn't done stand-up for 3 or 4 weeks, which is, like, a ton of time for him. You know?
Yeah.
And he had, like,
I haven't gone 3 or 4 weeks.
And he had, like, a whole, he had, like, a sheet, and he never does this, and I think he's okay if I say this. Like, he just had, like, a whole thing on beanbag chairs or something.
Uh-huh.
Like, 10 minutes on beanbag chairs. And he was just, like, kind of reading
it. That's a guy, he didn't even do, like, stories, but he has 10 to 20 minutes on something.
Yeah, yeah. He just completely.
His bacon chunk.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And it's just, like.
And it was like,
everything about that topic.
And this is nothing but a compliment, because he was like just reading it, and it was already done. It was
reading it off a piece of paper.
Yeah, he's just reading what he had, and it was already in his voice and mm-hmm. basically done.
Just not memorized.
Right.
Yeah.
And he hadn't tried it yet.
Uh huh. Like, he wrote it that day.
Not that day, but there's stuff that he'd been writing.
Okay.
And it's just like, that's my hope, is that at some point I'll get to where.
Was he getting laughs off that?
Oh, it destroyed.
Was he already famous at that point?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was like, but you just wonder if you get to the point where you can just write in your voice, and you kind of, like, even George Carlin's like, I kind of know where the laughs are going to be, but then you're never 100%
positive,
sure.
Positive, yeah.
But you just hope, like, at some point you're like, all right, this is all going to kind of work. I don't know if it's going to be 100%, but at least I know that I can try this bit for a minute that I've never done before, and it'll work. And that was like, oh, man, well, I hope I get to that point. At some stretch.
All I do is I just go up with, I like their way, I just go up with like a topic
mm-hmm.
that I've thought of. I'm like, hey, what's, I sort of talk to the crowd about it.
Yeah.
And then if anyone seems interested, I keep talking about it. And if they don't, I just sort of stop.
Yeah.
Or I'll try to say it the next time in a funnier way. I'm like, I need a way to say that better than nothing.
But is that because you need the audience? Because I feel that way. Like, if you tell me, like, hey, there's like 10 people in the crowd, or hey, this is sold out,
mm-hmm.
and everyone's like, well, they're going to get the same show. I go, no, they are
not. No, they're
not.
No, they're not.
They're going to bring out the best in me.
I came up with late night spots at the store where it was like 10 people, shitty, spread out through the room, a couple drunk. And it's like, I'm going to, if you do like really showy bits right now, it looks foolish.
Right.
So, yeah, you're way more talkative. That's how I developed like a conversational style on stage. Just because you have to just talk to them.
I mean, that's the thing is with my style, it was like the writing's got to be really tight and the delivery has to be unique because it's not high energy. It's not characters. It's not.
Yeah.
So it's like, so that's why I knew it would take a little bit longer. But most of the guys that I respected were like, just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So. Because there's always guys that are like, man, you need to be more higher energy. Voice.
Yeah, people tell you what to do. And it's like, no, that would work for you maybe.
Yeah.
Or you think that. It's like, what are you talking about?
But then I have to be that every night
yeah.
and I'll kill myself.
That's what you were saying yesterday with Tripoli. You're getting ready for that Ferguson showcase.
Yeah.
And Tripoli's like, come on, let's do this. Like in the back. And you're like, dude, that's.
He's like, you pumped, man? You pumped? It's like, no, we're not playing basketball.
Yeah,
it's
like that's
comedy.
Not the way I get ready.
It's you're, like you're telling a jazz way. Musician. You ready
Let's
to rock?
Shit. No, I don't ever rock.
I'm just ready to fucking hang out, man.
Okay, so you had this this job that you're starting
again.
To do. Yeah. You had the Redman was good at that. He used to keep me with the play a buzzer. And I'm like, thank you. And I go back to the subject. I get it now a little bit. But so you have this job that you're increasingly finding unfulfilling.
Right. It just feels like a waste of time. It was crazy because I was like, I would do the 6 o'clock newscast.
Yeah.
I would cover a football game, like I would just go and get like, you know, a minute of highlights.
Yeah.
I would do a stand-up show.
Yeah.
And then anchor the 11 o'clock sports thing.
Where would you do a stand-up show? Like, how far
just
away?
Just, yeah, in the Reading. They would have, okay. like, a night somewhere in Chico.
They have one everywhere, don't they?
Yeah, it's
They
crazy.
Got one everywhere.
I remember, like...
There's some open mic at whatever city you're in at some restaurant
well,
or
they
bar.
Would have, like, a one night, like, the... I remember, like, you know, because it's close enough to San Francisco, it'd be, like, I remember Todd Glass or Greg Proops or, like, Sue Murphy. I would see, like, people like that come through, and they don't remember any of this stuff. But that was when I was, like, I'm the news guy introducing the...
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
This introducing the comedy show?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I would do like I've a couple those bits, guys. But it was like, yeah, it's
bad. Like, why are they here?
Yeah, yeah.
And like cross promotion. Like, what do you? No one knows they're here.
So that's what I mean about like having that. Oh, you're the news guy. You're never gonna be funny. So yeah. I just had to like get out of that.
And did you at that point? Did you drop the SportsCenter dream?
Pretty much because I was like I was saying about the radio thing. It's like, all right, if I make it out of Reading. Maybe I go to Reno for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then maybe I go like, work I my way up to Center? Phoenix where I was 5 years ago. And it's like, well, where does this really go? And am I going to enjoy the ride along?
Longer in there. Yeah.
So then at that point, it was like, and it wasn't like I was getting a ton of stand-up gigs. It was like, hey, this is pretty fun. And
were you getting paid at all for stand-up?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was getting paid. I was doing like
San Fran scene was always good at like they actually made money at stand up. The LA scene was like you make money at your day job.
I was always good at like making money at stand up. Like I would do like all the one nighters, like even the stuff that people would be like, I bet you'd be completely wrong for these bar gigs. Or I was like, I fucking
you like fuck it, I'll take it.
I've done one of everything pretty much, you know. Like, and I really have. I've done, you know,
what
gay bars, black nights. Yeah. Cruises, mother of twins conventions, like VFWs in West Virginia.
Really?
Like I've done everything that you can pretty much do. Wow. So it's like, ugh. And there always be people like, I think I told you the other night, I did a show and it was me, Paul Reiser, Chris Kattan, and Earthquake. Like,
really?
You can't get a more
wow,
random show than that.
That's very eclectic.
It's like, hey, if people are funny, like, it's like, I remember we worked in New Jersey and like, I was featuring for Patrice O'Neill, and like, oh, he's the O&A guy, and are you going to be dirty enough for this guy? And I was like, no, I'm just going to do what I do.
Yeah,
and they
were
all scared.
It takes
like,
most people a while to realize
of
that.
Of course, it was like, I did great, and the
You're
shows
like, no, I'm
were
never
fun.
The dirty guy, so why would I start doing that now?
And it's like, no, both of us are funny, so this is a great show. That's all it is. So
that's like saying, like, let's say you're a team of Shaquille O'Neals. And then, like, all big guys and whatever. And then you're playing this team with a bunch of good shooting guards. You're like, are you guys going to try to push up the pace now to compete with them? And you're like, no, we're just going to keep throwing it down low to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where we'll win.
And you do still see, like, I remember we did, it was like something at the Improv, and it was like a USC, like, fraternity.
The
like,
Rose
it was
Bowl
all,
thing?
Like, football douchebags. Uh-huh. And, like,
they had every year.
And, like, Dana Gould was there, who was, like, one of my heroes, but it's like, he's not a little bit older, but just looks like kind of a dad. And
he
can
relate
suit.
To those people. Those people don't relate.
And it's
to
like,
him.
What is he gonna do? And he did some joke about like, you know, this. I saw this hooker. Her clit was so big, she could have fucked me in the ass with it. And it's like he won over the room like immediately.
Really?
Like he just like knows. It's like, oh, this guy's fucking. Obviously,
he's like,
a
I've done enough of these.
He's
places.
Done everything. So don't even like.
I just open dirty. I'm fine.
Yeah. He can do what he can make anybody laugh. Like that's the lesson in that. It's like
I do never... those teen tours of the Improv.
Right, right, yeah.
And everybody asks me, they're like, "Do what do you do? Like, all your clean stuff?" And I'm like, "No,
no, you
extra
do.
Filthy, like as filthy as I ever get. I get in front of those 14-year-olds. Oh, they love it.
But it is so weird that you're still like, oh, I wonder how this guy's gonna do. And it's like, yeah, oh no, he's a comedian. He's
they've been doing this
funny.
For 25 years. They're so good at it now.
Right." So you do have to kind of like every time you feel like somebody's not giving you a shot or like, hey, how is this going to go? You just have to say, hey, you know what?
Trust me.
I know what I'm doing.
Don't I did. I played in Seattle for the first time. The main stage is closed now. Some bar there near the old Key Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady was like, oh, just so you know, dirty stuff doesn't work in this place.
Right.
And even however many years ago it was, 5-6 years ago,
uh-huh.
I was like, maybe the dirty stuff that you get in this place normally doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just do what I do and crowds are into it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not going to – don't – it's Seattle. It's not the fucking Amish country. They'll get it.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember there's a club in like,
I mean, open micers are too dirty for them. Fine, they're bad because they're open micers, not because they're dirty
anyway.
Yeah,
and the jokes don't end up being funny.
Yeah, like once you get confidence in what you're doing, it's so much easier.
It's like that club in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
it wants to be clean,
mm-hmm.
and like they just tell everyone like, and it's basically their way of like they can tell you what jokes not to do basically,
ugh.
And so it's like, and it's completely wrong because it's like, it's Erie, Pennsylvania. It's the most blue collar town you can get. If anybody wants a dirty comedy show, it's these fucking people that need it. And it's just like, it's
the craziest thing. Was that you telling me about this club or Kurt Metzger? Or maybe it's Tom Segura. Where it was like, they went there and they went to the club owner. It's like, why don't you, I looked at your lineup. I don't recognize any of the names on your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, who can we book? Like, tons of guys from New York that would drive here.
Right.
And she was like, look, like, he was like Greg Giraldo, and like, he just named a bunch of people.
Uh-huh.
And the lady was like, can they work clean? And he's like, no. And she's like, oh, well, then we don't need it. I'm like,
that,
what?
That might be the place, because they're very right. like, oh, this guy is the biggest thing in Buffalo. And it's like, well, aim higher.
You're so close.
You can get, like, I think I worked with Rick Rockwell at that place.
Really?
And it's just like, oh, so you're either getting somebody who might be famous for 9 minutes or Screech.
That was the original Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire?
Yeah. Oh, he was so bad.
Was he?
And he did a Q&A, which is like, that's always a sign of like, all right, I'm out of jokes.
Oh, yeah. I'm out, so what else?
Anybody have any questions?
I always say that when I get a little too high on stage. And I say, any questions so far? It's just me like, what's my next bit? I can't remember it. So I'll just do this. We'll get a laugh. Maybe someone will actually ask a question. It'll be a fun moment.
Yeah.
So, okay, so then you weren't liking it, so then you said, fuck it, and quit?
I did.
Wow.
I put in my notice.
By the way.
New Year's Day of 2000.
Really?
For no reason, really.
And then they were like, all right.
I was like, what were you going to say?
They were just, well, I was going to say before, but keep going, what they said.
My plan was I was either going to move to L.A. and do stand-up and, like, go to grad school.
Yeah.
Or San
grad school
Francisco.
For what?
I don't know. Probably teaching.
Just wanted to be in school?
Yeah. Just something that...
Now, when I said before that you... When did you give up the dream about SportsCenter? Mm-hmm. Have you still not given up that dream?
Well, here's the thing. Like, I think I'm still,
You're earning qualifications to be on that show. I mean, you're doing stand-up, like, performing.
Right, right. Well, the thing is, like, I feel like at that point... Like, I was, like, too inside sports. Like, I didn't even write a lot of jokes about sports because, like, you know what? I'm kind of too into sports right now more than most people. But now that's what is great is people have niche things, you know? Uh-huh. Like, so it's like...
Or they really know boxing or something.
I'd really love to do, like, a freer form version of... Obviously, you'd love to do, like, a sports comedy show, which, you know, Norm Macdonald's probably the closest one to kind of making that work or...
why don't you do a podcast?
Yeah, or a podcast or a radio show. I mean, uh-huh. I love radio.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, you know, Kornheiser went to Binghamton as well.
Oh, really?
And pardon the interruption, obviously people love that show, but I think those guys, like, I watch it because it's very informative.
Yeah.
But I think those guys think they're hilarious.
Kornheiser and Wilbon?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I think those guys think that they're so funny.
Yeah.
And
Kornheiser used to do radio on WTEM in D.C., the team.
Oh, right, yeah.
570. I think it moved numbers. But it used to be so shitty, like, you could just call in.
Mm-hmm.
And he would get, like, you could get through.
Right.
They'd be
right.
Like, oh, John, how you doing this week? And it's just like, and no one knew about it yet. He worked there just because he thought he was super funny. He was, though. He ran an entertaining show.
Yeah, he's definitely entertaining, but I don't think those guys, like, especially all the rest of those guys. I think Kornheiser is probably the funniest of those guys. But Wilbon, Levitard.
Kornheiser used to always do...
all those guys.
Wilbon was never as funny as Kornheiser. But Kornheiser used to do this thing where he also wrote every Sunday, I think, in the style section of the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'd have his sports columns, whatever, but style section every Sunday. And he just wrote something about completely non-sports related.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. It was funny columns.
Yeah, and obviously he's got to be a great writer.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been doing it so long. But it was that thing, even the ESPN guys were getting like... Because I went
getting
through
what?
That.
I'm about like, PTI?
Well, no, but back then you're like watching Kenny Mayne and like all these guys coming up with their home run call
uh-huh.
or Stuart Scott waiting all day to say this one fucking thing which doesn't even fit in the highlights from like some movie that week.
Really?
It's just like, oh, I don't want to be one of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so.
Oh,
and
you mean the guys that aren't that funny but still trying to like be goofy?
That's what they do, because I've done it. I was like, oh, I'm waiting all day to say this one line from Austin Powers.
Just to say it so you can feel fun that you said it.
Yeah, and I'm funny. And it's like, no, that's you calculating it 9 hours ahead of time. Like, if you want to say something off the cuff, then work on that skill. But don't try to be like the funny, I don't know. It was just like, I don't want to be the goofy guy that's just corny.
Sometimes you look at them with a veil, falls away from your eye. You can sort of see people for what they actually are, just people.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you're not like, it'd be cool to be on ESPN. It's like, no, you're a person who sits around, like you said, all day long thinking of, I'm going to say this line.
Right.
And you're like, that's not fun.
And the thing is, they think that they're funny. And it's like, no, you do this. You're not that. Like, and that's the
thing.
You're
funny at being a sportscaster.
Right, right.
You're saying,
It's like, oh, I want to be more like Kevin Nealon or Norm MacDonald, who do the Weekend Update, than the guys who are telling sports scores and trying to be funny within that mode. You know? So it was just, I didn't see a way that I'd be able to develop that skill other than doing stand-up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that seemed to be the best way of, like, figuring out how to do that, you know? Because just doing, I felt the more I did news, I was just going to be more cardboard cutout guy, just reading stuff off a prompter, you know?
Right. And so you didn't want to do that.
It wasn't.
And you
really
don't want to be that goofy guy in SportsCenter either.
And you can't,
but you still got to say the scores.
Yeah. And
that's the main thing.
And you look at Ryan Seacrest or somebody like that who's got to interview these nobodies and uninteresting people.
Yeah, he can't be like, you're boring, everybody. Yeah. Come with a goddamn story. He's
just got to. I remember I did. Yeah. It was like, how do I? I did like the opening of
a
fucking parking ramp one time. And I'm just like, all right, there's another place that people can park here. And I said it like that.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, hey, you got to be excited. Like, no, it's the opening of a parking. I cannot be excited over this. If that's what
but that's
you
your job. It's,
yeah. And Ryan Seacrest does that. And there's other people that do that. But I was like, I can't do this. I can't make this exciting. There's no way I can not pick on that person if you send me on that
story. Yeah, when some people tell like gothy girls, they're like, smile more. People like you better. Like, no, smile more. You, April Sunshine. Like, they'll like you better. But that girl, no. She'll smile. It'll look like a horror show. Like, just, it's not. Yeah, some people can be excited about that shit.
Right.
There's somebody out there that can be, and they should have a job like that.
Right.
And whenever I see, if you fake it, people will know the difference.
And whenever you see, like, Brian Williams or one of those news anchors try to be on Saturday Night Live or, like, a political guy.
Like, you're a cheese dick, and you have no idea what this is. Every once in a while, you'll get somebody who can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, David Duchovny's fun on, like, the Larry Sanders Show.
Right, yeah.
Like, certain people, like, oh, you get this crossover. Like, you're cool. You get it. But not very often.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what I kind of was like. I figured out, like, oh, I'm more of. This is more of what I do. Like, I'm more a sarcastic kind of funny guy than, like, a guy that's, like, a trusted news source or somebody that's going to be, you know, commanding respect from covering a political race. You know, I still had to, you know, I interviewed, like, Dan Quayle and, like, all these presidential people. And it's like, what am I doing?
I don't care. I don't even care. Yeah, it's a weird thing when you're like, I'm asking questions because I'm supposed to ask you questions, but I don't want the answers. I don't give a fuck.
And that is the weird thing when people complain about news. Is like, yeah, these reporters really don't know anything.
So even the regular, the news part people, they're just like.
No, you get a press release and a fax, and you just ask people two questions, and you got to make a minute story out of it. You know?
Wow, really?
And
so those people, the newscast, they're really not journalists in any way.
I mean, I'm sure in the bigger markets they are a little bit, but they're still covering the stories that the producers want them to cover.
Right.
You know?
So they'll pick the playlist.
Yeah. And
so if the ramp story is on the docket, it's on the docket. Somebody's got to be there.
Yeah, and especially if it's a national thing, because that's what they do is, you know, the Fox, you know, headquarters will call all the little affiliates. They're like, hey, what's the big story today? And if there's nothing going on, they might pick some dumb story from Reading that day because it's a slow news day.
And did they ask you to take like a tone that would match? If it's like, if it's some Christmas miracle, they're like, are you supposed to be like, it's amazing, Kent, we're here? Or if it's something friendly, you're supposed to be like, well, it's going to be a great sale today.
It just depends. Like, there's definitely, I mean,
14 people
it's a style.
Murdered in Chico this afternoon. as gangland violence hit our streets and our schools.
And I guess the big question, will the Strangle be able to enjoy that weekend outdoors? But that's obviously...
He's still at large, but will he be a tan? Let's find out.
And when the Daily Show star, of course, I'm like, well, that's what I'm doing at a real station right now.
You're just trying to make that get away with it.
So I was like, wow, I could do that. But then even the Daily Show became like everyone's kind of doing the same like kind of sarcastic shtick. And I was like, no, you could just really do regular news stories and make them that funny too. You know what I mean? But they become like a political voice instead of just a.
That's the problem when they start taking themselves too seriously.
Yeah,
I don't watch the Daily Show much. I don't have cable anymore, so I don't bother with it. But even before, I don't know. I liked it whenever I watched it. I just never got into it.
Yeah,
but I remember one that he had where it was talking about Sylvester Stallone was when the Olympic torch was coming down like in Hollywood and stuff, and people were passing it off all over here, and Sylvester Stallone got to carry it on the beach or whatever. And the quote was that Jon Stewart read was something like. You know, Stallone said, just goes to show you if you know, no matter who you are, you could, everything's possible at this point. And John Stewart was like, yes, Sylvester Stallone, it's possible to run with the Olympic torch on the beach if you are Sylvester Stallone. Like, what are you talking about? But I would just like the commentary on that. It was like, yeah, cool. You can do jokes on regular shit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, even the Weekend Update, you know, when Norm did it,
It was so good. It was so good when he did it.
And
did you try to write for his sports show?
What's that?
Did you try to write for a sports
show? No, I tried to write for that Sports Onion show. I think Norm's was already staffed up. But yeah, I would have loved... I mean, I think there's still room for that thing because, like I said, all those... I mean, there's nobody worse
to put
on
television. Why don't they have a guy on local news just doing funny, just being funny? Because he'd be terrible? They wouldn't get a really funny person? Is that it?
Well, I remember at one point, like, the local sports was almost endangered because it was like, well, ESPN is doing all the national stuff, so...
Nobody cares about local.
All you
got to
do is cover fishing tournaments or peewee football or something. And, yeah, that was the other bad part about it. It was like, yeah, once a month you'll cover the Raiders, but then, like...
Yeah, you think, like, sports, cool, I get to meet all these great athletes. Like, no, there's no great athletes in the Uno championship.
Yeah.
The county Uno championship.
And it's like, and whatever qualifies for sports there, it's just like.
So this is what your show is all about? Just all your time?
I just dug up a lot of the stories that I did. You know, I did that story about the Titanic movie. Because that's the thing that kind of, you know, whenever I see somebody doing Man on the Street stuff.
Yeah.
In, you know, the Tonight Show or something like that. I was like, that's what I did, like, every day. Like, if I didn't have a show, I would just go to the mall. And like
interview people?
Yeah, it's like, hey, what are you getting for Valentine's Day? Wow. And just like make fun of them or make it funny somehow or
now I almost feel like that'd be annoying people.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard to get people to talk to you. Even if you're even if you have like a news
camera,
they're like, it seems
I gotta
official.
Go shopping. I don't have time for this. Don't get away from me, beggar.
But then there's a certain person that wants to be
really
on TV.
Wants to be on.
And those are the people that you really want to pick on anyway.
Jeff Ross does his thing on stage now at the end of his like long sets where he'll do a speed roast of a real audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it so much because he says, all right, whoever wants to get picked on by me, come up. And I was like, aren't you afraid like who would come up?
Yeah.
He goes, the people that would get up, those are the people that I want coming up.
Right, yeah.
If you gave me a poll of people, I'd be like, I don't know who to pick. But those people that stand up like, oh, that crazy adventurous one, drunk lady. Yeah, I want them coming up.
Right.
It's never the calm people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's who you want to interview on the street. Or maybe you do, I guess. Yeah, I guess it would be the people who would be more excited.
Well, but the thing is, you just want, even if you get crazy people, it's just going to be funnier.
Yeah.
And then you get to edit. And I mean, that was the one thing I did really like about that job was like, everything was yours from beginning to the end. So, like, you shot it, you got to edit it,
so
you got to write
thing.
It.
Wow.
So it was your thing. So it did kind of teach you how to do that skill, even though it wasn't all about comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Where are you taking the show? Toronto, Montreal?
Yeah, and then I'll probably do New York at some point. I'm not sure. There's a couple of different places.
That shit's all soon, though, right?
Yeah, Toronto, probably Montreal. January, February.
You have a website?
Just on my website. It's paulhasawebsite.com.
paulhasawebsite.com because nobody knows how to spell Morrissey.
It's just easy. paulmorrissey.com is a real estate agent in San Diego.
Really?
So, yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, people try to buy my CD on his website. Just end
Where does
up
he sell them? The
shitty
listings?
Shitty house in La Jolla that they can't afford.
You should come out with your next CD called The La Jolla Listings. So you can just get a shitload of business.
But yeah, it's just been a completely different show. So that it's been months and, you know, it's really hard to like, you know, you can tell stories, but just to mash it into
an hour.
Yeah,
to a form.
Yeah, but the videos are all playing really great. So it's going to be a great thing. And, you know, I obviously love to do it at, you know, some of the festivals next year, you know, maybe Edinburgh, Montreal or
something,
cool. You know. So
yeah, Montreal's fun. You should go there if you can.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. I perform in Canada at least once a year, but I haven't done the Montreal Festival. I've only done the HBO Festival, so.
Oh. It's well, they're all fun.
And you were just in Canada, right?
Uh-huh.
Did you try poutine?
I love it.
See, I won't try that shit.
What?
No way.
You got to do it when you're in French Canada, in Montreal.
Oh, man.
Yeah, get some. But, okay, what if I tell you my favorite place to get poutine?
I don't,
the world, my favorite restaurant to get it.
But will it be the best?
It's amazing. They have pages of poutine recipes.
Okay.
It's called La Banquise.
Okay.
It's in Montreal. It's out of the way a little bit.
And we'll put that out to the Twitter followers too. The best poutine in
What's your Twitter?
Mine's just Paul Morrissey.
What is it? Two R's?
It's M O R R I S S E Y, just like the singer. Morrissey,
two R's, two S's.
For all you sad teenagers out there.
And Mexicans for some reason. They also love Morrissey. I never understood how that. I think it was one cool Mexican guy who didn't come out of the closet
until
like way later, and everybody thought he was cool.
I wore a Morrissey t-shirt on Ferguson last time, and you know how they're weird about brand names, but they're just like, well, the people who know who Morrissey is will think it's cool, and the people who don't just think I'm wearing a t-shirt with my name on it.
To just say
they
Morrissey?
Think I'm an asshole.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, all right, fine, totally fine. That's funny. Yeah, La Banquise. You should try it. You should go there.
La Banquise. All right.
You're going to be in Montreal for like a little while.
Yeah, a week.
Dude, that's the place. Especially if you're drunk. You don't drink much, huh?
Yeah, I drink a little bit.
If you're drunk, it's the place to go. It's amazing. Because here's a poutine. You've seen what it is. Potato. It's just French fries with gravy and cheese curds. Uh-huh. But then you have varieties from there. You can have sausage in your gravy. You could have marinara sauce instead. Meat sauce.
I just felt like you pressured me into being a drunk. Like you did. Isn't that funny? You don't drink. No, I drink.
Yeah, you did. You felt like, peer pressure.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, I do.
It's like, I can drink a beer. No, I do. I can't drink. We were just talking about this the other day.
If you get high, it's also wonderful.
But I can't drink. Do you drink before your shows? Or is
no,
it
every once in a long while, I'll be peer pressured into like doing a shot. Or I'll have a beer that I'll drink half of before. But that's it.
Yeah, I always felt that way that Steve Martin said it. Like, he listened to a recording and he's like slurring his words.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I already feel like I talk slow enough as it is.
Yeah.
Like the pacing is just where it needs to be. So if it's any.
Yeah, once it affects your like actual physical like skills, then it's negative.
Right.
Some people are fine when they're drunk, but if that's not you, you can't do that.
Yeah, but that's a bad routine to get into. You've seen those guys that have to get absolutely shit faced to get. It's like, I think this is more about the drinking.
Yeah, they're like, well, I need it to be funny. Like, no, you just need it.
Doesn't seem like you enjoy the comedy part of this all that much.
So then you just quit and you never looked back, huh?
I quit, yeah. I put that, and it was still the thing where I kind of left to do comedy, but it was like I was kind of done with, you know, I did all the same douchey things that everyone does, like, because I still didn't make any money. Like, if I was making more money, it probably would have been a harder decision to make. Yeah. But people still thought I was insane. They're like, well, you're TV sports anchor for ABC. Why would you quit that job?
Yeah.
And it was just hard. But
how much was it paying at this point?
That's why it's still like 17 or 18 grand. So,
for the year?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it was like.
It's a giant raise from the $5 an hour for 20 hours a week.
And the clothing allowance from JCPenney.
So. Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
the free haircut.
Sam, it's
but that made me learn early on, like, any job that's really great isn't going to pay a lot until you kind of
separate yourself,
become the best at it, you know,
to become needed, I guess. Yeah, every comic goes in going like, well, I should be the best, and you're like, relax, you've been doing comedy for 4 years, you're terrible, we were all terrible, you're better than you were, yeah, but you're still really bad.
Yeah,
so enjoy the a few, you know, wins that you get, and then just wait.
And then maybe at some point you'll get to where you make in one night what you made your fifth year in comedy. You know what I mean? Like, there's all these guys that make, you know, you hear you make 20 grand a week or something like that. It's like, all right, that was my first 2 years in comedy.
God, you make so little. Boris Hamilton used to do this joke at the Westwood Brew Co. It's like alternative comedy open mic. I used to love it. Because he was so, they would shit on other comedians in general there at open mics a lot in L.A. So he was like, how about this? How about you have to quit comedy if you didn't make $7 last year?
Mm-hmm.
And people would all moan. They'd be like, aw. And he'd be like, is that too high a number?
Right.
Should I lower it to 4?
Yeah, yeah.
But that, and it was just sort of felt like it stung because it was right. Like, you should make $7 if you're going to consider yourself a comic. $7 isn't hard to make. Do one gig out of town for 10.
Yeah. Well, that is the thing about, especially for me, that's tough. And because I was more like, when I kind of quit, like what happened was I went to LA to see if I'd like it. Yeah. And then I just wasn't there yet. And I was like, you know what? I'll move back. I ended up moving back with my parents and I was like substitute teaching.
Yeah.
And
I did everybody's
that.
Way.
And I did that
test.
Thing.
The CBEST test?
Well, this was in New York. So it was just like my high school. So it was like, I was still subbing for like the teachers that I had, which is even more depressing.
That's so demeaning.
But it was like, I read that thing like Mitch Hedberg and that Chard Hogan guy, like they just got a van and drove around for like 2 months and they just called for guest sets.
Really?
And so that's
what I did.
Was he already
rich by then?
No. This is like when they first left.
Who's
like,
Chard Hogan?
He was like a buddy of his that
they came
like,
up with?
I don't think he's... I don't know how much comedy he does. I just saw him at the Venture.
But like they came up together or something? Or they're just
They were just like buddies. And there was that other girl that was like kind of his girlfriend and manager at that point. And she would like call ahead to see if they could get one or the other guest
Lynn
sets.
Showcroft?
No, something her name was like Jana or something like that. And so that's what I did. Like I went from like, you know, the Columbus Funny Bone to Nashville to
just doing guest spots,
Florida.
Saying hi.
Yeah. Just did guest spots.
That was always a thing. They were like, if you go into a place, it's way better than sending a tape because you're a live person.
Especially back then.
Yeah.
So, like, I did get, like, a bunch of work out of it. And then later that year, I got into NYU, like, graduate school. And I ended up moving to New York City the week before September 11th of 2001.
Oh, that's a great time.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you waited a month, prices would have been
timing.
So low. Prices would have been way lower.
And then the rest is history. It's all in the vault, as George Michael would say. Okay.
She's like, all right, thank you, everybody.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody.
That's Paul Morrissey. Okay.
And that's Ari.
Okay, goodbye. All right, that was it. I hope you guys enjoyed. The third part of our conversation, which we just got into talking about Catholicism and my probably never going to happen move to New York, I'll release that on Friday. Not as a full episode, this is an extra feature. But it was a fun conversation. And if you're Catholic and you get offended by anti-Catholic sentiment, then please do not listen to that, because you will be offended, because it's just pure anti-Catholic sentiment. All right, everybody. Thank you. Please tell a friend if you enjoy this. I'll see you in 2 days on Friday. Bye.